Blog Talk Radio.
Shama, 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 shama.
Zambia Blog Talk Radio. My name is Kelvin Chishimba, broadcasting from Indianapolis, Indiana. It is Saturday, May 27th. It is 10:32 a.m. Eastern Time, 7:32 Pacific Standard Time. Today, we will be talking to Honorable Brian Mushimba, Minister of Transport and Communication. We will be looking at a wide range of issues, including transportation policies, guidelines, accidents and strategies to provide safe movement of travelers and goods on our roads. At this point, please bear with me as I connect our guest. Hello, listeners. My name once again is Kelvin, and we will be talking to Honorable Brian Mushimba, who is already on the line. Honorable Mushimba, good morning.
Good morning to you, and good morning to all the other listeners.
Awesome. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing wonderful. It's a beautiful morning here in the USA.
Okay, great. So today, Honorable Mushimba, and we thank you so much for finding the time to liaise with us. We want to talk about a range of issues, transportation policies, guidelines, your vision when you went back and joined politics and became Minister of Transport. We are going to talk about the burning issue of accidents on our roads and any strategies to provide safe movement of travelers and goods. So let me start with your vision of making Zambia a regional transport and communication hub. What is your vision on that score?
Thank you. Thank you very much, Kelvin, for that important question. And it is indeed the mandate that I carry as a Minister of Transport and Communications is that we aspire to transition Zambia into a regional transport and communications hub as a PF government. And this is on the backdrop of the fact that we are very centrally located in the southern part of Africa, very stable politically and security-wise, and because all traffic, north, south, west, east, pass through Zambia, we are a natural to become that hub. But we have to apply our minds to make sure that we become that hub, because there are certain things that it takes to become that transport and communications hub. And that's what me as Minister of Transport and Communication has been mandated to look through, to make sure that we create that environment, we put policies together, and we put up infrastructures that are going to support that aspiration. And what we've essentially done is on the policy side, we've looked at what does it take to have the most efficient transport networks in the country.
Okay.
And how should we develop that network for the next 25, 50 years? We've looked into the National Transport Policy, which was last time it was reviewed in 2002. We're actually doing a revision of that National Transport Policy so it can align to the thinking of us becoming a hub, a regional hub. We're developing the first of a kind of a national transport master plan. We've never had this in Zambia before.
Okay.
It's the first time we're going to have a national transport master plan that looks at all four modes of transportation in a multimodal a transport mode, you know, road, rail, waterways, and aviation, and how they interact to make that hub that we want to make. And also on the communication side, we also need to make sure that as we're developing the physical infrastructure for transport, we're also doing the same on the communication side. We're laying the fiber we need to lay. We're connecting it to the undersea cabling that we need to on both sides of the Atlantic, of the oceans. We are increasing the broadband. We're talking satellite communication to make sure that as we totally transform the country into a regional transport and communications hub, the infrastructure is going to be there to support that, because all goods and passengers and commerce for Southern Africa will have to pass through Zambia, and we want to make sure that we efficientize that movement of goods, services, and commerce in the region.
Okay.
So that's a vision.
Great. That sounds great. There's been contentious opinions. I know Zambia is expanding the Kenneth Kaunda International Airport. It is also building a $522 million Copperbelt International Airport. The contention is, Honorable Mushimba, these are highly expensive infrastructure projects. Where's the money coming from?
That's a very good question. And there are many scores of thoughts around infrastructure development vis-a-vis the demand for it, and do we need it now? Why this size of infrastructure, and can you justify it? So all those questions come up. You know, I was in Parliament making a ministerial statement on rail transportation and how we are outside the two rail companies that we have, Tazara and Zambia Railways, we're opening up greenfield rail projects, you know, about 5-6 of them across the country to connect to all these corridors that we want to connect to, trade corridors. And I was being asked the question, why do you want to open up the country this way with all this money? Do we need to do this now?
Okay.
And the answer is similar to what you're asking about. We are doing, we are constructing a brand new terminal for Kenneth Kaunda International Airport. It's going to handle 4 million passengers per year capacity on top of the 2 million passengers per year capacity for the existing terminal. So we're going to have 6 million capacity to handle 6 million passengers per year at Kenneth Kaunda International Airport. And the terminal we're building is state of the art. It's going to come with all the bells and whistles. We're going to have hotels inside the airport, hotels outside. We're going to have a shopping mall. We're going to have all these things, you know, the presidential pavilion, the VVIP pavilions, and separate terminals for dignitaries that want to come and visit us. All these things that speaks to what I'm calling bells and whistles. And why are we doing this? And Kenneth Copperbelt Airport is going to have similar airport. The narrative actually is speaking into what I spoke about. We want to transition to a transport and communications hub as a country. We need to have the state-of-the-art infrastructure that speak to that aspiration.
Okay.
The demand for these services is there. Some of it we see, some of it is hidden. Because sometimes until you give people the option, they find other ways to move things. In Zambia right now, we have a situation where a lot of transportation is happening by road, because the other three modes of transport, aviation, waterways, and rail, has not been invested in to the levels that we are starting to invest now. And once we do that, you're going to see an opening up of all the four modes of transportation, and cargo, people, and services are going to move with the right appropriate means of transportation. If you want to go by air right now, we go by road, because air transportation is too expensive, is not accessible to the common person on the ground. We want to make that change, so that all these things are available, they're accessible, and they're affordable. So people can now choose the most appropriate way to transport themselves, goods, and cargo.
Okay, that sounds good. Another concern we have expressed here, Honorable Mshimba, is that all this infrastructure that is being developed is not benefiting the local companies. Is there any specific policy by your government to ensure that local contractors benefit from all these projects?
It's a very, very good question, very important question, actually, Kelvin. And the answer is yes. As a government, we are aware and concerned that many of the projects we're doing, there's a lot of foreign component to it. And when you do projects with foreigners, obviously, you know what that entails.
Right.
You know, the profits are being repatriated, the bulk of the money is actually going outside, and the employment that you need to create sometimes don't create. The reason why we have heavily relied on foreigners is because we don't have capacity at the moment to the level that we want to have the capacity. There are certain things that we just are not ready to do ourselves as Zambians. And when I say as Zambians, I'm talking about the Zambians in Zambia, because you argue with me that maybe there are Zambians outside Zambia that do these things, but they are not in Zambia.
Right.
You know, so in Zambia, we are handicapped. And because we're handicapped, we have to keep moving forward with all the options that we can create to continue moving forward. So we've brought these people in, and some of these people that have come in, some of these foreigners that have come in, you ask the question, are we paying for the projects? Some of these foreigners are actually bringing in the funds to develop this infrastructure. We're doing some concessionary lending, borrowing, you know, so that we can do these infrastructures, because we need to do this. But as government, we have put a policy in place that 20% of every project that we're doing, if it's being done by foreigners, 20% of the works are going to be done by the locals. What we are thinking is that through that 20%, there will be a lot of capacity building among Zambians. And at some time X, we're going to have enough capacity that 80%, 90% of these works are going to be done by the Zambians, because we'll have been building capacity over time.
Okay. Let's talk about the toll roads. I believe you have lived in the diaspora and are not a stranger to toll roads. My concern is for the local communities in the vicinity of those toll roads. Walk us through that process. Do they pay for driving on those roads? Are there any plans to open up some kind of a feeder road where they don't have to pay? Because obviously this would be very expensive for them.
I think the long-term view of this is exactly what you're saying, because we are tolling many of the roads now, because if you follow the history of Zambia and the road development, we are quick to build a road, but we do not put a system in place for maintenance of that road. So you find a lot of potholes on our roads, and people start complaining. You invest so much money in this road, 5 years down the road, you let the road die because you just didn't have a mechanism to maintain that road. Because as a government, you are aware that the resources are limited, and there are many competing needs. You know, and hospitals that needs to be built, medicines that needs to be procured. As a government, when you have 10 kwacha and you need to buy drugs for citizens or maintain a road, most likely going to buy drugs, because drugs means life. You know, so that's the position we've been in. And what we did was to step back to say, we need to find a way that sustainably maintains our roads, so the roads can have the longevity and the life they need to have, and also protect the investment, because we build these roads at very, very high cost to the government.
Okay.
And tolling was one of those. So we're doing about 10 tolls on 10 economic roads we've identified. We're going to do many more tolls on many of the roads. And what we do for the people living in the local area is to give them we give them a break. If you look at the tour we just commissioned not too long ago with the president in Shimabala, between Kafue and Lusaka, there are people that live in Kafue, work in Lusaka. So what are we doing for those people? They are frequent users of that tour. They are not going to pay the same amount that someone who's using that tour for the first time is going to pay. There will be a lot of concession that's given to them. They will be given cards, and they will literally pay something that's very manageable to a point that they are not disadvantaged because they work in Kafue. So those measures have been put in place for frequent users of those tours.
Okay, thank you for that. So in your opinion, has this toll road project been a success so far?
It's very, very successful, highly successful. I was just reading a statement from NRFA, the agency, government agency that handles and collects the resources. In the first 3 months of the year, they've collected about 500 million kwacha already. The projection is by year end they'll go into the billions of kwachas. You know, that's a lot of money that when you talk about maintaining roads and opening up new roads, you know, that amount of resources gives you those options.
Okay, thank you for that. Let's look at the communication sector. There have been complaints by Zambians in Zambia that the mobile providers are providing poor quality service. Does your ministry have a plan to ensure that providers are providing quality services in terms of charges, in terms of, you know, availability of the network?
Yes, that complaint is valid. Actually, I've spoken to that at many of the discussions I've had when I've engaged the ICT sector, which is under my ministry, including the mobile network operators. And as a government, obviously, we are looking at the legislation side and regulation side to make sure that we put in place the right amount of legislation and regulation to force the sectors to act a certain way. Outside that, we've actually just had the new licensing framework approved through cabinet, which changes the entire licensing process in this sector, which will compel every licensee to maintain a certain type of quality, and also gives options to each licensee. Because in the past, we used to have a license for voice, a license for data, voice license for this, and many licenses, which was not very optimized and robust. What we've done is we've converged the licenses. So one carrier will take a license, and if they're only able to provide voice, they'll take a license and they'll pay for a license that gives them four other services they can offer. What that will force them to do is to invest into the infrastructure and the backbone to be able to offer those other things, because they will have paid for that license. Why should they not use it? That is going to call for more investment in the sector, is going to call for network expansion, network modernization, and that investment is going to grow a certain amount of jobs, is going to increase the quality of service that we are looking for. And at the same time, because of this new licensing framework, We are bringing in more operators into the space. So we're going to increase competition. And with competition, you know, competition has this way of, you know, really bringing the efficiencies that you need in a space, you know, in terms of quality, in terms of pricing. And we see in the next year to year and a half, we're going to see a sector that is very, 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 very good. Quality is improved, and the cost to the consumer is drastically reduced.
Okay. Honorable Mushimba, we all know that the communication sector is a capital-intensive sector, and all those licenses that your ministry has issued. My question is, are there any Zambians that have been able to obtain those licenses?
At the moment, we have three mobile service operators in MTN, Airtel, and Zamtel. Obviously, you know Zamtel is a Zambian-run company, 100% owned by the Zambian government. We're doing a lot of investment in Zamtel right now. As I speak, we have two projects, big projects, $300 million injection into expanding the network and modernizing the network, and another $280 million in expanding the reach of Zamtel in rural areas, because currently, actually, Zamtel may be the only operator that's in the rural areas, because many of these, the MTNs and the Airtels, They are very profit-driven, and they want to stay along the line of rail where most of the traffic is currently. But as Zambia, as a government, we want to make sure that we have inclusion and we have penetration across the country. So we are doing investment even off the line of rail, and Zambia is taking the charge on that. Outside these three, the new licensing framework is open to anyone now to apply for a new license. We may have a fourth mobile service provider. We may have a fifth. There are obviously processes and procedures to get that license. We don't just want someone who wakes up and says, I want to take the fourth license, and they don't have the capacity to actually operationalize what it takes to have that license. So there's a very rigorous process behind another one coming in. If you remember, if you followed the story in Zambia over the last few years, Honorable Kavindele brought Vodacom?
Vodacom, yes.
Yes, Vodacom. And at the time, I think we only were allowing three operators and was not able to get the approvals needed through ZICTA, who was the regulator. I think he went to court, and that has been discharged at court. So he's actually free to come back and apply now that the law allows him to apply. And there are many others. There's Vodafone right now who has been doing just data. And because of this new licensing framework, they're actually coming back to apply for the converged licensing framework, which will allow them to do voice over IP and be able to offer for voice over WhatsApp and over other data-driven backbones, as it were.
Okay, thank you. In December last year, you signed a statutory instrument 76, which relates to banning of night driving of public service vehicles between 21 hours and 05 a.m. Some of the initiatives and measures you brought to road safety were fatigue management among drivers, automatic speed limiters on PSVs, and use of GPS, alcohol testing among drivers, and curbing other distractions while driving, such as cell phone use, and institutionalizing safety programs by owners of PSVs. Enforcement of these initiatives and measures is quite costly. You need resources, both human and financial resources, on our roads. Has this yielded the results you anticipated?
It's a very, very important question, Kelvin. Thank you very much. You know, we subscribe to the UN mandates that we have the number of deaths on our roads by 2020. We've been averaging about 10 deaths per day on our roads over the last few years. And we want to make sure that we have that actually eliminated is our target. When I came into the ministry last year, we worked on those statutory instruments. There were 13 total, and you enumerate them very well in your opening question. They do those things that you spoke to. And what we're thinking, they were a stopgap measure as we try to look at medium-term and long-term solutions to our road safety profile. And we wanted to make sure that as we were looking at all these strategies and initiatives that were medium-term and long-term includes obviously the type of roads we're designing and engineering and the banking of the roads, or the road safety features, including bus lanes, bike lanes, all those things are long-term, you know, because they talk about reconfiguring the entire transport system, and the policies I spoke about, the National Transport Policy and the Master Plans have those things as long-term things. But medium-term and immediate-term, we needed to do something, and those are the SIs that I signed. And initially, our enforcement was actually very good. In fact, let me just say the enforcement of and compliance of these SIs has been very good. Enforcement has been equally good. But about 3 months after we signed, especially the night driving, we started getting some noise that there are certain sections of transport corridors that were disobeying this law. There were issues from Chingola to Solwezi and then Lusaka to Chipata. You know, because obviously our enforcement, I think, was skewed mostly along the line of rail. So there were those roads that were not as heavily policed as the line of rail, you know, Livingstone all the way to the Copper Belt. And that has been noted. If you follow the news lately in Zambia, there was an accident not too long ago because a transporter, again, defied the night driving and they plunged the bus into a ditch and 17 people died, 46 were rushed to the hospital. RATSA is investigating that. That's speaking to compliance, especially outside these roads that are heavily policed. And what I've instructed RATSA is to make sure they intensify the presence on the road with patrol vehicles, with other things to make sure that the presence is felt, and when it's 21 hours, the compliance can be enforced. I've requested additional funding from NRFA because there's a component of the funds that we get from actually these stores for road safety. I've asked that be increased, and as of last week, RATSA confirmed that they've received that additional funding. So you're going to see more patrols on the roads with RATSA and police to make sure that enforcement is up to par, and we can reduce the numbers the way we want to reduce them.
Okay. I'm glad you mentioned the Chingola Solezi Road, and I'm sure you know that that is an eyesore, especially in the rainy season. Why hasn't government prioritized the construction of that road, since it's transporting people and mineral wealth? And can you give us the state of that road at this present moment?
Yeah, we have actually three contractors constructing that road right now. I think you haven't been in Zambia lately. We awarded the contract to three contractors. They've been working. The rains obviously get in the way sometimes, but all three contractors have been paid fully, and the works are ongoing. We recognize the fact that this is, Northwestern Province is a new copper belt. There's a lot of mining investments going on and happening. A lot of foreign direct investment into the mining sector is going into that area. And we are very mindful of the government to make sure that we open up that corridor. In fact, that corridor is a corridor that is of interest to SADC region as well. Right now, we are actually developing a rail line with Honorable Kavindere, a Northwestern Rail, from Chingola through Solwezi Kalumbila all the way to Jimbe at the border of Zambia and Angola, which will go to Lobito Port. And that rail is a tripartite with DRC and Angola and ourselves. It had delayed because on our side, Honorable Kavindele was developing it as an individual, and as an individual developing a rail line with two other governments became a challenge. We've stepped in as a government. I've taken a cabinet memo to cabinet for us as government to acquire shares in that business so we can de-risk the project and we can have all the funding we need for the project. So very soon, that project will start together with the roads that we're doing in that area.
Okay. Thank you for that. I'm going to ask you one more question and allow my callers to ask their questions. Parastatals in Zambia are believed to be a drain on national resources. Can you tell us what parastatals fall under your ministry and their performance? If the performance is bad, are there any initiatives of turning around performance of parastatals under your ministry?
Very, very good question indeed. My ministry is very key and critical in the sense that almost all assets the government owns under my ministry. So if the government is going to collect revenues, especially non-tax revenues, they are going to do it through my ministry. And because roads are there, airports are there, water transportation, rail, you know, you go in the ICT space, telecoms, so everything is really in the ministry. And it plays a very critical role. And one thing that I've done and I've impressed upon my staff is that we recognize this potential for revenue generation on behalf of government through these services that we provide in the ministry. We have many parastatals covering the sectors I've spoken about. We have the Zambia Railways. We have the Tazara, which is co-owned with the Tanzanian government. We have the RATSAs. We have the Airport Corporation, the Civil Aviation Corporation. We have the ZAMTEOs. We have the Mpulungu Port. So all these parastatals, I think 12, 13 of them are under my ministry.
Okay.
Many of them have not been doing too well. When I did my quarterly performance report to His Excellency. This is something that I spoke about, and His Excellency, the President, Mr. Edgar Gachagua Lungu, took me to task on it in terms of what initiatives are we going to put in place to make sure that we turn these things around. Because outside ZAMPOST, which is also another parastate in my ministry, outside ZAMPOST, and outside Airport Corporation, the rest have not been making money. And you actually, if you step back for a minute, right. ZAMPOST, that's a post office. It's supposed to be dead because right. people don't send mail the way they used to. How is ZAMPOST making money and an institution, let's say, such as ZAMTEL, you know, is not making money?
Right.
You know, I think it calls for a lot of thinking in terms of in the ministry, and some of the things that we are doing in the ministry to provide oversight and guidance into these institutions is going to bear fruits. One thing that I picked up very quickly on is that the management structures, the corporate governance, the accountability and the controls were not where they should be. And people know how much they can get away with, especially what doesn't get measured doesn't get done. So I found these things in the ministry in terms of our parastatals. And the other day I was on radio and there was print media story that come June, all the parastatals, all the boards have appointed, all these parastatals are going to have a performance contract with myself, which we are going to track quarterly. We're starting to enforce accountability and targets, and measuring those targets to make sure that people wake up and they do what they're supposed to do in these boards and the management of these parastatals.
Okay, thank you for that. Callers and listeners, we are talking to Honorable Brian Mushimba, Minister of Transport and Communication. At this point, I will allow my callers to ask their questions. Caller 919, last 43751, please identify yourself.
Good day.
Hello,
good
caller
day.
919.
Dr. Patrick. Yes.
Okay,
good day.
Dr. Patrick,
Dr.
go ahead
Patrick.
And ask your question.
Okay, my question has to do with the authorization and appropriation. Authorization, as you know, has to do with the laws, the standards, and appropriation is the money to do it. With my questions, Honorable Mushimba, is Transport and Communication Ministry, your ministry, had been created alongside with Works and Supply Ministry. So what I wanted to know is, do you have authorization and appropriation, or do you have to work with Works and Supply in order to get the appropriation monies?
That's a very good question, actually. You speak to the structure and the jurisdiction in the ministries. As we are aware, prior to 2011, when PF came into government under His Excellency, Mr. Michael Chufiasata, may he so rest in peace, this ministry was one ministry that was Ministry of Transport, Communication, Works and Supply. And we had Honorable Mkanga as a minister. Today, as I speak, this ministry has been split into three ministries. There's the Ministry of Transport and Communication, which I head. There's Ministry of Works and Supply, which Honorable Martin Kuwa heads. And there's Ministry of Housing and Infrastructure, which Honorable Ronald Chitotela heads. And we've actually, the reason for the splitting by His Excellency, Mr. Edgar Chagalungu, was to increase focus on certain aspects that needed to be done. Because when you have a big ministry, you muddy the water sometimes. And I think there were some things that were being dropped through the cracks. And you wanted certain focus to speak to the PF manifesto, to speak to the mandate we had, to speak to the accelerated development we want to achieve in the 5 years that have been given by the people to superintend over the affairs of the country. So we have redefined these ministries. And my ministry, for lack of better words, is the ministry in charge of the thinking in this space, transport and communication. We need to think what type of transport networks we need. We need to see how Zambia is going to grow over the next 25 years, 50 years, and what infrastructure we're going to need, where we're going to need it. So my ministry does a lot of pre-feasibility studies with African Development Bank and other cooperating partners. When we start the construction side, our infrastructure ministry comes in. and we work with them to make sure that the rail line is laid where it's supposed to be laid. The road is constructed where it needs to be constructed. Remember, we will have done the thinking to justify why we need a road here, because of economics, because of all these other things, and the multiplier effect, the domino effect the road is going to bring. We will have done all that. But to construct, another ministry comes in and we do it jointly. When they finish constructing, they give it back to us, because the roads infrastructure is under us. Maintenance of buildings and certain things goes to Works and Supply. You know, all government housing and government vehicles fall under Ministry of Works and Supply. You know, government houses, buildings, wherever, that has been removed, so that the maintenance, you know, the development of that is under that ministry. So there is authorization and appropriation that we have, just like Housing and Infrastructure has their own, and Works and Supply has their own.
Okay, thank you for that, Honorable Minister. I'm going to allow Mustafa. Sorry, Dr. Patrick, let's try and save your question for towards the end of the show. I want to accommodate as many callers. I will get back to you.
Yes.
Mustafa, go ahead with your question.
Thank you very much, Kevin. And Honorable Mushimba, it's a pleasure to have you back. On the road, it's good to hear that there's work being done on the Chingola Solwezi. But there was, I think when PF came into power, they identified that getting to Chirundu was a problem for everyone, because they had to go through Lusaka and Kafue, and they started constructing another road through Leopard Hill, and there's actually a bridge that has been built there, but for some reason that road stopped. Is there any plans to continue, or has it also been worked on already? Thank you.
Thank you, Mustafa, for that very good question. My fellow Muflira guy, Mustafa, we miss you in Muflira. We need you back. it's a very good question, and to answer your question, Mustafa, what happened to that road is what happened to many other development projects we started. As TF, when it came into power, we bit off too much than we can chew. And we started many projects, constructing hospitals, constructing health posts, roads, airports. We did a lot. We campaigned on transforming the country into a land-linked, into a modern country that had all modern infrastructures, and our resource envelope ran out. That's what happened. So some of the roads we could not continue because we couldn't find them. And if you listened, and Mustafa, you did, because we were together in Parliament when Honorable Mutati gave his 2017 budget speech, he spoke about going back to these projects to complete them before we start new projects. And that's what we're doing as a government. We're focusing on those things we broke ground on, but we could not continue at the time because we ran out of money. We've mobilized resources. We have resources now. We've gone back. Chingola Solwezi Road is one of those. I think we had started. We identified the contractor. We didn't pay the contract. Now we've paid the contract. So you see many of these things are going to start that stopped, and this road is one of those, Musaba.
Okay, thank you for that. I'll call upon caller 618, last 46480. Introduce yourself, please.
This is Dr. Kalonde.
Dr. Kalonde, go ahead with your question.
Yeah, welcome, Mr. Brian Mushimba. This is the Kalonde. I think if you have a good memory, you remember we had a spat on Facebook with regard to the Serenge Chipata rail line that you are constructing. Now, let me start with the way the first question that came from Kelvin. I'm very disappointed that you failed to answer that question. He asked you, where is the money coming from for the two airports? You went around and around. You didn't answer. You didn't tell us where the money is coming from. If you recall, you never mentioned that. Second, on the Chipata rail line, with our discussion on Facebook, I told you that there was no study that was done for this, for you to sign the deal with China, $2.3 million, which you signed before the feasibility studies And recently, like about less than 2 months, you just showed on your Facebook again on Lusaka Times that now you have finished the feasibility study. As I know and believe, is that when you go to a bank, you go with your business plan. And I don't know if you did some research, which I do believe you didn't. You are just finishing them now. What are we doing to our country to start signing loans without feasibility studies? What if it was not suitable for us to construct a rail line there? And I ask you the economic sense that it would make to construct a rail line at $2.3 million between Serenge and Chipata. What goods are moving in there? What have you studied? In 1 year, how much will that rail line bring to the country? Even if you are saying we are forward-looking.
Dr. Kalonde, sorry, I have to cut you short. Give the minister an opportunity to respond to your question.
Okay, just one more point.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Kalonde.
One more point.
Thank you, Dr. Kalonde.
Go ahead, Honorable.
Thank you, Dr. Kalonde, for that question. Yes, I remember our exchange on Facebook on Serenge Chipata Rail. You go back to the question that was asked by Kelvin in terms of funding. I think I alluded to that. I said we are getting concessionary funding that we're getting from many cooperating partners. I may not have answered it then, but I went back and addressed how we are getting our funding for many of the projects. I spoke about these foreign investors that are coming in. We're coming in now with PPP arrangements, public-private partnerships. They're bringing funds. We give land. We're getting concessionary lending, very, very cheap money from China Exim Bank, from other Exim banks, because we believe that we need to develop the infrastructure to unlock the country and the potential the country has, because for people to come to your country, if you've even read the Singaporean story, you have to have the infrastructure to attract the type of clientele you need. You know, if you want to set up a resort in an area and there are no supporting infrastructure, no one will come to your resort. So you need to have all these amenities that speak to what you want to do. And we've thought through that and we're doing that. On the funding issue also, China committed $60 billion to Africa under what we call the FOCAC Fund, which President Xi Jinping signed 2 years ago in South Africa. And many African countries are accessing this. Zambia is accessing this. The $2.3 billion project that you spoke to, Dr. Kalonde, is coming with this type of funding from FOCAC, which the Chinese government is providing. And for your own information, don't mislead people when they say there was no studies done. There is no project on this earth that can be done without studies. Not even in Zambia. We have procedures and policies that govern how a project is developed. There has to be bankable documentation, especially when you're borrowing money. You know, so Serenge Petauke Chipata Rail was studied, and the studies were funded by African Development Bank, by an Italian engineering firm that completed, did the bankable documentation, did everything in terms of the economics of the rail, why we need it, how we're going to use it, how it's going to pay for itself. All that has been done. And these documents, for your own information, are available because they're public documents. We are public. Government is public. You can access this documentation whenever you want. You can go to the ministry. You talk to my director of transportation. These things are under there. You give you these documents to make sure that you're satisfied. So that is what I would say to answer your question. The studies were done. All studies are done on these infrastructure projects. There has to be a bankable documentation. There has to be the economics has to be looked into to make sure that we make sense of what we're going to do before we do it.
Thank you for that, Honorable. Maybe a suggestion from me would be your ministry should look at upgrading your website to provide all these documents, since these are public documents and people maybe in the diaspora don't have visibility or access to these documents. Maybe if they are online, you know, we'd be better informed. But thank you for your response. I will allow caller. Awesome. I will allow caller 289, last 43719, introduce yourself.
Yeah, this is Kayla Mulenga. Kevin, how are you?
I'm great, Dr. Mulenga. How are you?
I'm getting along well.
Ndivebuino shani, la doctor, tulemi fuwa kumufida na imwe. Wako kola.
Yo mkwati, tukesa.
Go ahead with your question, Dr. Mulenga.
The question, first of all, I like to recommend what you are doing. I think you are bringing transparency, you know, to the ministry, which is good, and information you are providing to everybody, that is very good. However, when I was home, I did see the growth of cellular phones in Zambia. I believe out of maybe 15 million people, at least maybe over 10 million are having cell phones. And then as you are, as the ministry in charge of that, what are you doing in terms of protecting the users, the telephone owners, from abuse by the companies? That's one question. And then the other question is this. Since cellular phones is a technology which can be abused, like, for example, in terms of hacking, we are hearing about every day, what measures do you have to make sure that you, from the security point of view, nothing dangerous will happen to our country? Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor, for that for those questions. Indeed, the subscriber base for cell phones in Zambia now stands at 12 million. So there's quite a bit of usage. And as a country, we've actually started migrating ourselves to an electronic platform. And as government, if you haven't followed, we've started the e-government, where many of the services are going to be given using e-platforms, e-service, e-banking, and many of these things. We've finished Smart Zambia Phase 1, which put in the backbone infrastructure we need, including the National Data Center, a Tier 3 National Data Center, the one of a kind in the SADC region, actually, which will connect us to the cloud as well. We also did ICT Center of Excellence, colleges across the country, to start training more ICT-savvy people in our country, because the economy is going to migrate digitally. So we're doing the background works for that. We're starting Smart Zambia Phase 2, where even a computer assembly plant to be set up in Zambia. Many smart gadgets are going to be made in Zambia. We've signed contracts on Smart Zambia Phase 2. You are welcome to participate. Many of you have the strong backgrounds to be able to contribute to some of these things that we're doing. Answering your question on the abuse by the companies of these smartphones, if the abuse is coming from overcharging, Zicta, the regulator, has a policy and they guide, and anyone who charges outside the guidelines, they are punished. In terms of legislation, I talked about the new licensing framework, which is going to compel more investment, modernization and upgrade of networks, competition, to make sure that we continue depressing the cost to the consumer down so that the uptake could increase, because we don't want the 75% penetration that we have now. We want 100%. And to do that, there are certain things we're doing as a government to incentivize the growth and the penetrations. I spoke about Zamtel investing in infrastructure in rural areas. You know, I've spoken about the new licensing framework. I've talked about the regulator, Zicta, and the things they're doing. So all these things are speaking into protecting the consumer, into increasing investment, into expanding network, expanding growth, and many other things into that space. Your second question on cyber security is a big concern of government. There are many abuses that we are seeing that we need to make sure that we are ready for. As we speak, migrating the economy digitally, we're going to use a lot of smart gadgets. We need to make sure that the environment is there to support this migration. My ministry is crafting 4 bills that are going to Parliament. There's cyber crime, there's cyber security, there's data protection, there's electronic commerce. On top of that, I was meeting the Israelis not too long ago, because I went with the president to Israel when he went. And part of my trip when I went with the president was to look into what Israel does best that we don't do well, which is cybersecurity. They are known internationally to be one of a kind. And as a government, you want to have this helicopter view of the cyberspace to make sure that when you put in your credit card to renew your driver license, that information is protected. If it's violated and accessed by the wrong person, there are laws that you rely on to get the prosecution and this person to be punished the way they're supposed to be punished. Those things are happening as well in the ministry.
Okay, thank you for that, Honorable Minister. I just want to appeal to my callers. If you are ready with a question, please press 1 so my switchboard will indicate to me you're ready to ask that question. Otherwise, I'll go in a sequence. Caller 717, last 48027, introduce yourself.
Good morning, Kelvin. This is Daniel Sebo calling from Pennsylvania. Thank you very much for taking this time and come and have a discussion with us. I grew up in Mufulira and I attended Eastry Primary School. In the 70s, in that area, there was one time they were having problems with the robbers, so they block off the roads. And as a young man, he used to disturb me much, you know, because sometimes, you know, you have to go around or someone is picking you up, but they have to go around. And as a young man, he used to disturb me. I even have to have the debates with my brother and say, why do I have to do this? Why does that? Until I came to this this country, how important it is having, you know, the roads and the way, I think the way the government went about blocking those roads, it was bad. It wasn't the right way that they went about blocking the roads. Then in my teenage, I got to work in Congo in Kashogwe. And as we go into the mission from Zambia, we pass Lubumbashi, we pass Kasenga, and we were looking at the Belgians, the plan they had, you know, with that area, the way they were constructing roads. The time the Belgium came there, they did not even have equipment like Zambian government can afford, you know. They were limited, but they had the plan. And then we got to the mission. We were trying to having running water and stuff like that, but we didn't know the pipes where they were on the map. So one of the missionaries went to South Africa, and he was able to come up with a map where everything was laid down. So my question is this, Honorable, because you mentioned that at the beginning of your statement that, you know, there's some things that you're doing, especially the airport, that the previous government never did. And because of time, you know, and there's so many things I would have given an example because of the rivers here in America when, you know, every capital was built near the river. As a foreigner, as a Zambian, when I came to this country, I'm able to go somewhere and get information and it says, oh, this is the reason they are doing this. So as a Zambian government, is there any facilities or are you working on that? The second generation, even the next minister of transportation, instead of making to try to be elected next time, we can access that information, or we can build upon that foundation. Is there anything like, are you working on that? Or have you seen that the previous government did that? If you understand my
thank
question.
Thank you for that question. Thank you for that question. I think towards the end, you actually honed in on the question and it became very clear. And the answer is what I spoke to when I started, of the many documents that we're doing is the master planning that we're doing. That did not actually exist before. When I went to the ministry, I asked for some of these things, and you could see disjointed information, and obviously that gave rise to change of direction and course at the time the new minister comes in or new government comes in. What we're doing now is we are collaborating with an Israeli company, Israeli engineering company that has presence in Zambia, and we're developing master plans for the transport side. On the ICT side, we're collaborating as well and developing the master plan there. What we want to do is to have a document that is comprehensive, exhaustive, and detailed on the development of Zambia 25, 50 years down the road. And I draw from my experience. Before I went to Zambia and joined politics, I was working for ESCOM in South Africa. And I worked for the department of ESCOM called ERP, Enterprise Resource Planning. And what we did in that department was to look 30 years down the road, 50 years down the road, the type of energy infrastructure South Africa is going to need. We looked at population growth, urbanization. We looked at industrialization, all those things. And there was a model we developed could feed this information in, and it spits out what you need, including the investment model you need every 5 years to have the South Africa you need 50 years. We're doing that in Zambia now. What that will do when we finish it is that even when we change governments, there's no need to change the trajectory of the country, and you don't lose time, and you don't get distracted.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for that, Honorable. Titus, go ahead with your question.
Honorable Mushimba, my question is, with your ministry, how are you going to secure this deficiency of development around port of entries? I can quote Kazungula, Mwami, Chirundu, Katima, Muliro, Nakonde, Kasumbalesa. You have a collection of money, which is a lot, but we don't see the plowing back of anything like a modern hospital or some infrastructure that you're talking, minus getting a loan from anywhere, being plowed in by the money that you're picking from those ports. Secondly, when with the tolls that you commissioned, I would like to know if a portal comes in on a road that was built within 2 years and the portal is seen this week, how quick are you going to seal that portal since you have monies that are collected in a week, which is more than enough to seal that portal? What is the threshold of injecting into the problem that we see? Because I think that's where the accountability comes in. If the money from the tolls is being used for something else, then we're going to see more of roads that are bad, but the collection of toll money is going up and unaccounted for the main reason why those tolls were built. Thirdly, as a minister, could you tell us on you kind of about one thing and the envelope finished with the money, and now you're gone to these other firms to get loans to go ahead and do next projects that you're trying to make a hub as Zambia. Can we get a report of what the minister did before you, which was a failure or a success, so that as we move forward with the government changes, we can know that Brian Mushimba found this problem and created a solution this way, so the next minister who comes to that ministry can pick up from your successes and continue with that, despite whether the change of government or anything. We kind of need a report that should be transparent through these telecommunication or phases of internet, so we can really see who did what, who mismanaged money, what can be the corrective measures. I end there.
Thank you, Titus. Honorable, go ahead and respond to that.
Yes, thank you, Titus, for those questions. I think you spoke about the deficiencies at points of entry, and if I understood your question well, I think the deficiencies at ports of entry is getting some attention. You mentioned Kasumbalesa, the Nakondes, Mwami border posts, and many other border posts. We actually belong to the SADC region, and the SADC region at the Ministerial Council that I attend regularly, we actually opening up corridors, we're lowering cost of doing business in SADC, we're signing multilateral agreements, trade agreements that speak into efficient border crossing. We need goods and cargo to move in the SADC region without any problems. And those things are happening. One border post are happening right now. So instead of you coming to a border post, you find the Malawians on one side, Zambians on one side, you spend 2 days on the Malawi side, spend 2 days on Zambia side. That's 4 days on one border post before you cross. Those things are being addressed right now. We're having one border post, one building for both governments under the SADC umbrella. and you go in there, 20 minutes, you're done with all your border crossing, and you move on. We're doing a lot of electronic transactions, paperless or cashless transactions to make sure that these monies find themselves in the treasuries of the respective governments so that the money could be used for the intended purposes. So those things are receiving attention right now. I was in Chipata recently meeting my counterpart from Malawi. We're signing the agreements on the Mwami border post there to make it into one border post. I'm going to Kasumbalesa very soon to do similar engagement. My counterpart in Angola called me. I was supposed to go there last week, but they're into an election cycle. So we pushed that to June after the elections. We're discussing again these cross-border movements to make sure that we align and make sure our movements are supported and made efficient in the SADC region. You spoke about the potholes and the money being used for the intended purposes. I think this is the reason why we are tolling the roads. It's the reason why when we toll a road, the funds go to NRFA and it goes and stays there, because those monies are earmarked for the intended purpose, which is making sure that the roads are maintained. And wherever a pothole is seen, the maintenance is immediate, because we have now a resource envelope to draw from, and those monies are not going to be used for anything else but road maintenance. And that's why the accounting has been done in such a way that funds are sitting works on the road. The envelope finishing, I spoke to the fact that when we came in as a government in 2011, as PF government, we were very ambitious. Obviously, we had campaigned long and hard, 10 years in the opposition, and we wanted to make sure that as we went in full speed, and we broke ground on many projects, and with very good intentions, obviously. But we realized that we couldn't sustain all of them at the speed that we wanted, you know, because the resource envelope is limited, obviously, and we had many competing objectives. It doesn't mean that the people that were there before us did anything wrong. No, it's just that, you know, they wanted to hurry and do a lot of development. And believe it or not, the level of infrastructure development that has happened from 2011 to now is only equal to the level of infrastructure development that happened when UNIP took over government, when they were building universities and roads. This is the level of infrastructure development we are seeing now. The roads, the Link 8000 that you are seeing, which is linking every district in Zambia by road, the airport investment, Kenneth Kaunda International Airport, $397 million going into it. Ndola International Airport, $397 million going into it. Mbala demilitarization of Mbala Airport into a commercial airport, many millions of dollars going into there. Mansa Airport, Solwezi Airport, Chipata Airport. You come from that, you go to water transportation. We've bought 27 dredging equipment spread across the country. At many millions of dollars, we're going to dredge all rivers and canals. We bought vessels onto those rivers. Water transportation for the first time will be available in Zambia at the rate or the expectation that we desire from government, especially where there are water bodies and rivers. Kafue River is going to be navigable for the first time from wherever it starts all the way through Lusaka for tourism purposes, and other people that don't want to go by road or rail, they want to go by water. These things that we are doing as PF government are well thought through, well intentioned, and we have many of them because we are in a hurry to develop. We ran out of resources, we've regrouped, the external shocks we suffered didn't help, the kwacha depreciated, we had no rents, and we had load shedding, all those things that really, if you step back, they were not of our doing, but we had to manage through them. The kwacha stabilized. Power generation has increased, FDI keep coming back, investors keep coming back. The other day I was meeting a company that wants to set up a cargo airline in Zambia to support SADC. So every cargo that is going to go in Southern Africa is going to go through Zambia, through this cargo airline. They're bringing in 737 aircrafts to start this. All these things we are doing are speaking to the mandate we have and the desire we have to develop Zambia. And when the resource envelope ran out, it was not mismanagement, it's just because we had too many things to do and we ran out of resources. We've regrouped, the resources have been found, either internally through our own means of raising those funds or concessionary lending and loans, and we're moving forward to make sure that we deliver on the mandate that we have from the people of Zambia.
Thank you for that, Honorable. Before I allow caller 631, last 47815, to ask a question, you have on numerous occasions in your responses alluded to depleting of the resource envelope. One of the hallmarks of development is strategic planning. How much of strategic planning have you implemented as the PF government? Are these projects in response to the needs of the Zambians or fulfill election promises?
That's a very, very good question. I think the strategic planning that we do as government obviously is there. You know, government is a very big, complex, multifaceted thing with a lot of moving parts. And much of government actually is civil service. And the civil service doesn't change. You know, politicians change. You know, I'm the only politician in the ministry. You know, so 99.999% of the people, I found them there. They've been there. Many of them 20 years, 30 years, because they're civil servants.
Right.
You know, so the thinking is always there in terms of what needs to be done. Where we come in as politicians is obviously to align our message that we sought to the people, because we talk to the people. Politicians talk to the people. They listen to the people, people's desires and aspirations. And we respond to that. And we commit to meeting what the people want. So that's now the linkage we need to create between politics and the civil service, to say, civil service, this is what we heard from the people. This is what the people want. And let's now align the thinking of civil service and the politics and the development agenda so we can go in a certain direction. So that thinking is there. That strategic thinking is there. What happened when PF came in government? Again, I go back to this, is that we had been in opposition for 10 years. We had made commitments and we came in. And when we came in, we wanted to do a lot because we felt the time was now to show the people that they didn't make a mistake. And that we've done. I've enumerated the number of projects we've done under this government. I've even equated it. The level of infrastructure development in Zambia today equaling the level of infrastructure development that happened when UNIP came into power. That.
Okay.
And we stand by that. That's how the resource envelope depleted. But the depletion of the resource envelope, again, I want to emphasize this. It was not only because we opened all those projects, because there was planning for those projects. They were bankable projects. We knew how we were going to fund them, and we knew they were economic or social in nature. But we suffered a lot of external shocks as well, which were not our doing. The copper prices, commodity prices went down. Our copper prices, we could not sell copper to anyone, which is our major source of revenue as government. Our kwacha went to nothing. Our water dried up. We instantly, you find yourself without ability to raise revenues to continue with these projects. That's what happened. I think you know very well, because this is well documented in terms of the external shocks we suffered, especially between 2014, 2015, and early part of 2016.
Okay, thank you for that, Honorable. Caller 631, last 47815, introduce yourself.
Good morning. My name is Noah. Good morning, Kelvin.
Good morning, Noah. Please, in the interest of time, Noah, be brief with your question, and I would ask the same from the Honorable Minister. Go ahead.
Yes, usually I am brief. thank you for coming to the show, Honorable Minister. I have two very quick questions. One question is, in the beginning of the show, you mentioned about Zambia being a transportation hub, and that for that to be successful, one of the things that you wanted to see was stability in the country. And you say there was stability in the country. We might have, you know, disagreements on that, because, you know, if you want Zambia to be a hub, which means it has to be stable as a country. Right now, I don't think most of this world really thinks Zambia is stable. That is a problem. For investors to come into our country, they have to realize that Zambia is stable. The airport of Zambia is under your ministry, which is the Ministry of Transportation and Communication. But if the Zambian government does not want to allow certain people coming into this country just because they do not like them.
No, sorry, I'm going to have to stop you there. Honorable Minister is not a government spokesperson to address those issues. This show was meant to highlight issues in the transport and communication sector. So if you can find a question relating to the current topic of discussion, I would appreciate that.
Okay, I'll go to my second question. Now, answering Titus's question, you say that the money coming in from these tolls goes to a specific account which decides what roads are going to be built. Now, who decides what roads are going to be built? I mean, because what would stop me from saying I want roads in Eastern Province to be built instead of Northwestern Province, or vice versa? What are the checks and balances that will assure the Zambian people that the money is going to the right roads that it's supposed to go to? Where does the buck stop? Who makes the final decision on what roads are going to be built with what money? Because if you made me the minister, and I didn't like Kelvin, I might not want to give Kelvin a little bit of money, but give somebody else. So who makes the final decision for what roads are going to be built?
Okay, Honorable Minister.
Thank you. Thank you for that question, Noah, and thank you, Kelvin, for that guidance. Much appreciated. In terms of who decides what development and where to develop, this is what government does, and the political leadership actually does that. Does that in tandem, obviously, with civil service? Does that in tandem with the aspirations and what you want to see Zambia become? You know, if we want Zambia to be a transport and communications hub, what does that mean? Where do we need to invest? Right now, we are starting the diversification of the economy, unlike any other time that in the past. The focus and the alignment of the budgets to speak to diversification is so clear that for the first time, I think we'll see the economy diversify from a mono economy of minerals that we've seen since independence to tourism, to industrialization, because we want that. What does it mean when we say we want to industrialize Zambia? Where are the industries going to be needed? Why would they be needed there? You know, tourism, where are the tourism corridors? What type of infrastructure do we need there? We want to go to agriculture and agricultural value chain. Where are the most rains? Where are the large tracts of land where we need to do agriculture? This is what government thinks through. And these are the decisions that drive investment. We're going to invest where we need roads because we're going to have farming blocks here. We're going to do flowers. We're going to do cereal. We're going to do this and needs to go to the market. These are the roads that are going to be required to bring produce to the market. We're going to do tourism here. We're going to open these four tourism corridors. So we need an airport here. We need roads here. We need hotels here. That is the level of thinking that the political leadership, the civil service engages in, and that is what guides investment.
Okay. Honorable Mshimba, April 12th, President Lungu told you specifically that Zamtel and Zikta, those two entities have become, they need to become innovative and start making profits. And obviously that was on the premise of weaning these two parastatals from government funding. Have you put in place any plans or are these profitable institutions? Can they stand on their own?
That's a very good question. I think it goes back to the question on the parastatals. And when I speak to parastatals, I think I'm covering all of them, specifically Zamtel. The reason why the president is very concerned about Zamtel is because it should be the best telecom company in Zambia.
Right.
It has the largest infrastructure footprint.
Right.
It has the largest reach to consumers, to customers, and it has many other services that these other providers don't have, including land phones. Only Zamtel, if you need a land phone in Zambia, only Zamtel gives you a land phone. Airtel doesn't, MTN doesn't. So they have these niches and competitive advantages that should see them do better than they are doing. So those are the concerns I think that are highlighted. And Since I went into this ministry, I've studied ZAMTEL, and I know ZAMTEL can do better. I spoke to the issues of management, the collapse of management systems, the lax corporate governance, the lax accountabilities that are required, the holding to account of management and the board, and I've spoken about the new boards that I've appointed being held to a strict performance standard. In June, all of them are going to sign performance contracts with me. ZAMTEL is one of those. We've changed top leadership. If you haven't followed, we used to have a different CEO than the CEO we have now at ZAMTEL. We have a totally new board, which I've appointed. And we're starting to have a new narrative with the right systems and culture in place to speak to the success that we need. Similarly with Zicta, we've changed leadership at Zicta recently, and we're going into a different direction that speaks to accountability, speak to how can we be successful, what type of culture should we have in these institutions that speak to profitability and commercial viability that the president is speaking to. We're doing those things.
Okay, thank you for that. Caller 469, last 42572, go ahead with your question. Caller 469-2572. Okay, we appreciate you listening in. Caller 484, last 41268.
Hello?
Hello, caller 484-1268.
Yes, hello?
Yes, yes, we can hear you. Please introduce yourself.
Yeah, this is Dr. Munsanje. Yeah,
Dr. Munsanje, thank you
thank
for calling into Block Talk Radio.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Brian Munchimba. I was recently in Zambia. I just actually came back last week, and I was impressed by the road network that has developed around the country. I even went through some tolls. One of them is the Shimavala toll, and congratulations for implementing that. The question that I wanted to ask the Honorable Minister is about the accidents. We are having too many people dying on the roads. Last week, I think 19 people died on some road from Eastern Province. What requirements are these transporters supposed to have? How roadworthy are the vehicles that are traveling? Obviously, I have heard that there's a law that they should not drive at night, but some people like this driver are likely to break the law. What punishment, punishment is there to make sure that everybody abides by that law, not to drive at night, like this driver who was who killed 19 people or 17 people. Yeah. Otherwise, that is my question. And can we have or do all transporters, do they have at a minimum an emergency kit that can cater for the number of passengers that they are carrying on those roads? Otherwise, I was satisfied by the amount of development going on in Zambia. Thank you.
Dr. Munsanje, that's music to my ears, because sometimes as politicians, and especially when in government and speaking to the development that is happening, the infrastructure, we tend to start sounding like a broken record trying to shove and force-feed people. But when it comes from someone like yourself that went there and actually experienced these things we're speaking to, and you actually can give testimony to it, I'm very humbled and pleased, Dr. Munsanje. Thank you for that. And there are many more projects in Zambia. The next time you come back, you'll see a different Zambia. We want to continue at that pace to make sure that the Zambia that you come back to is a very, very good Zambia that you'll be proud of. In terms of accidents, sir, indeed, these accidents keep happening. There's a gleam of hope that I want to share in the midst of this difficult conversation. We had been having at least 10 deaths per day And the last statistics that Zambia Police released for quarter one of 2017, we are down to five, between four and five. So we've seen over the last 3 years, we are starting to see the decline in the numbers. But that's four or five too many than we need to have. And what I've spoken to is the fact that we have underlying factors that needs to be addressed. One, the way we license our drivers. I've instructed RATSA to revisit all institutions that train drivers before they come to get licensed. We need to start changing fundamentally how we train people for that responsibility of driving. Secondly, the roadworthiness of vehicles. That is something that also I've instructed RATSA to stop any manual inspection of vehicles for roadworthiness. Because if a girlfriend brings a vehicle to RATSA and I'm the one that's inspecting it, I'm going to pass it, even if it's not roadworthy, because she's my girlfriend. That's human nature. I've said we stop that. We've procured equipment that is automated, that does a battery of tests on a vehicle before a vehicle is passed by the equipment that it will go through. It's a very good system. It needed to be customized because when we just brought it, every vehicle that was going in there was failing. We had bought the equipment from Germany, and it had the German readings in there because we didn't go to the Bureau of Standards and our own standards to customize that machinery for Zambian conditions. We've customized for Zambian conditions. All vehicles passing roadworthiness tests are going through that. We are starting to see some of that bearing the fruits in the numbers I've shared, that we've seen a drastic reduction in the number of deaths on our roads. The SIs I signed on fatigue management, on seatbelt wearing, on restriction of night driving, on speed limiting of public service vehicles, those things will continue as stopgap measures while we look at other medium to long-term measures, which I spoke to also, including reconfiguring our roads to increase the safety provisions for those roads and the type of roads we design and how we design them to have those safety provisions. I think we'll get there. Sometimes you don't have that, you can't, you know, shake a magic wand and get the answers you need. But I think as government, we've shown commitment and dedication to these provisions, and the compliance is actually very, very, very good. And the punishments for those that are not following up are very severe. You followed Dao Majandu bus services that killed 10 people near Kabwe. We suspended their license. RATSA, the agency in my ministry, suspended their license. They appealed to me to have their license restored. It went to a tribunal. The tribunal just gave them a mandate not too long ago to give them the license back under the conditions, which would take them probably 6 months to a year to meet. This other company that contravened the law, again, RATSA is investigating, but I can assure you that upon the conclusion of the investigation, whatever is appropriate for what was committed will be meted out, because we don't want to continue killing our people on our roads.
Okay, thank you for that. Honorable Minister, I believe that you as a PF government are putting in place all these measures, these policies to try and transform Zambia into the goals that you promised us. I want to share a quotation from Rod Blagojevich, and I quote, "A successful economic development strategy must focus on improving the skills of the area's workforce, reducing the cost of doing business, and making available the resources business needs to compete and thrive in today's global economy," end of quote. We know the bureaucracy in the civil service. We also know the skill sets, the skill levels are not high up there. What are you doing as a ministry to improve the skill sets of the civil servants in order for them to live up to the expectations that you have set as a government?
That's a very, very good question, very important question, because you're right. If you don't have the right skill set, it's going to impact how you develop. And one thing I've noticed in my ministry, which is same with other ministries, is the amount of money we put for capacity building and developing our personnel. there's actually a huge amount of money that goes into that. The human resource director in my ministry, the job day in, day out is aligning ministry staff, equipping them with the skills they need, skills that are forward-looking to make sure that we can respond to the demands of tomorrow. And I'm very happy to say we'll continue doing that. We send our civil servants abroad, some of them internally, to develop. And I say this, and I mean this when I say this, that the best educated people in Zambia actually work for government. They're civil servants. There are a lot of PhDs, a lot of master's degrees, a lot of bachelor's degrees in the civil service, because government understands that we need to develop certain skill set to improve. The bureaucracy is there. And this is something that frustrates government, especially at the political leadership, because we politicians are very clear in what we want to do. We've promised people we want accelerated development, we want jobs, we want infrastructure development, we want higher taxation, higher revenue from taxes, so we can do more for the country. We are clear in our mandate. Civil service has been very bureaucratic, but that is something also that we are trying to address. The civil service reform that is coming with the seventh national development plan, which was just approved. There's a lot of performance management that is happening. Many permanent secretaries have gone on to contracts with clear targets of performance that will start going down, trickling down to other officers. All these things are speaking to the fact that we've recognized the need for civil service to be competent and to reform to the tomorrow that we need. Cost of doing business is something that, as a government, we've also kept an eye on. Through my counterpart, Honorable Mwana Katwe, in the Ministry of Industry, Commerce and Trade, that is something that she spends a lot of time on, including provision of one-stop shop for investors. You come into Zambia, if you need 17 licenses to start your business, you don't go to 17 different places. You go in one place, and all of them, all the licenses you need, you get. We want to make sure that we are competitive in the SADC region, we can attract investment, and we can be that hub by creating the environment that we need for businesses to thrive in. And we are striving and working hard at doing that, and we're seeing quite a number of successes in that path.
Okay, we have 2 minutes to the end of the show. Unfortunately, we can never get to all the questions. I sincerely hope that we'll find some time in the future to bring you back on the show. Before you leave, Honorable Minister, what appeal can you make to those of us living in the diaspora and how we can help our country reach its goals?
That's a very good question, and I was hoping you ask it.
I ask these questions.
especially for me, because, you know, I lived in the diaspora for a long time. I was one of those lucky ones that that the government of Zambia educated, sent here to America. I trained here as an engineer, and I worked here as an engineer, and I went back home. And there is no better time than now for many of you guys to audit yourselves to see if you can come back and contribute. We spoke about skills and availability of skills. We have a lot of expatriates and foreigners in our economy because we don't have certain skills that we need. Many of these skills many Zambians actually have out here. Please consider coming back to see how you can contribute and add your voice to the development agenda. You know, you have a very good government, a listening government with His Excellency, the President, who engage, who dialogue, who see where you can fit and contribute and create the impact that we need to create and the Zambia that we need for our children when we all hang up our boots and retire.
Okay. I will be collecting resumes from my callers here, those interested in helping our government, and we'll forward them to you. Maybe you can slot us. You can slot us in positions that we're qualified for. This has been Zambia Blog Talk Radio. We've been talking to Honorable Brian Mushimba, who has provided major insight in his ministry. We want to thank you so much for joining us. We have come to the end of the show. Have a happy Saturday. And see you next time.
Thank you very much. Bye.